Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A day like yesterday, where we watched some of the terrible, terrible footage and the horrific, we read some of the eulogies around the Bibas family, feels like it is almost overwhelming. We have grief all around the world where we watch this, we feel it. Some of us protect ourselves from it, some of us don't protect ourselves from it. But either way, we can't help feeling what we experienced. Soren Kaplan is a clinical psychologist. She joins us this morning. Soren, good morning. Thank you for doing so again. How are you?
Morning, Howard. Good to be with you.
So yesterday, obviously a day that was of particular significance because this family, of course, has become an iconic in terms of this war. What did it mean to bury them in terms of where we are at emotionally?
So, Howard, of course, yesterday we saw an entire nation really pause, stop their day, stop their routines, as they watched Yarden Bibas bury his family in that one single casket, imagery that we're unlikely to ever exorcise from our memories. And we saw the whole nation come together to mourn an ordinary mother and her babies in an expression of their collective anguish. And you know, Howard, when we talk about grief, it's basically love with no place to go. And then what we do, we give it a shape and we channel it into mourning. So tens of thousands of people lined the streets, as you say, lined the highways, as this funeral procession made its somber way through the Yavne interchange, in a cavalcade of honor that other nations usually would reserve for royalty and dignitaries.
Amazing.
So thousands, scores of people, like, just showed up in this silent salute, snaking their way for kilometers as these bodies made their final journey home. And, you know, I was so moved by the silence of it all. The only sound was that of strangers weeping for people they most probably never met and never knew. So the backdrop of this, if we set the stage, is, you know, Israelis are still in a place of struggle, trying to process the scale, the enormity, the length and breadth of the trauma. They're in a space where grief and trauma collide. And essentially, grief and trauma have become different sides of the same coin for Israelis. And, you know, we saw grief doesn't discriminate.
No.
We saw rabbis, Hasidim, secular, religious people all coming together in this display of unity, of remembrance, of support, strangers hugging one another, holding on to one another for support and comfort. Israelis, carry on.
When we experience a loss, very often the time between the actual death and the funeral is in a way the most traumatic. Once the funeral happens, there's the sense of, or certainly it was that in my experience, a sense of, I don't know if it's relief, but there's a calmness that comes over you once the person is laid to rest. And only from that moment can you really start a process of moving. I mean, I guess you're always moving through it, but moving forward from it. Until then, you can't. What I am wondering is, given that they represented so much in this war, and they have now been placed to rest, does this mean that as a nation, we can start to move a little bit more forward towards a place of recovery?
Well, I do think that a funeral is a very significant event on the grief line. And I think what you're speaking to is absolutely true. There is like a collective exhaling. The worst is over. We've laid our loved one to rest. But there was such a sense of, you know, one hurting heart yesterday. There was like this orange hole in everybody's heart. You know, we're a nation who take things on. We feel our accountability for each other. You know, for me, one of the most chilling but at once poignant aspects of yesterday were people holding up those signs bearing one word, slicha, sorry. And then speaking to what you're saying, you know, Yarden Bibas himself, in his eulogy, implored his deceased wife, Shiri, not to let him sink into the darkness as she watched over him. And then we heard the words of his sister-in-law, Dana Silverman, sitting, who, in the face of her unspeakable grief, also expressed this refusal to be broken, a refusal to be defeated, and made a call for people to be strong and united and invincible. So, you know, we don't ever just move on in grief.
Sure.
But we do take steps to move forward, inch by agonizing inch. And in fact, Howard, as you'll know, the Torah in fact gives us an injunction, instructs us to sit shiva for a week, and then we are told, in no uncertain terms, to get up. And this is how we as Jewish people transform our grief and our trauma. This is how we don't succumb to the demons of grief. This is how we become grief and trauma survivors. You know, we always are a people called on to multitask our emotions. So we can yo-yo at any time from this intense sorrow to feeling inspired or enraged or frustrated all at once.
Does it make it more difficult that we aren't direct mourners, that we are mourning from very much, as you said, from afar, people we've actually probably never even heard of, let alone knew? Yarden Bibas has that structure of the Shiva, the Shloshim, the 30 days, the year. He's got a process. We don't actually have that process at all. What would your advice be to those of us that and we all pretty much share the same horror and grief? What's your advice to yourself and to all of us?
Well, I think that essentially going with the theme that we're talking about, that there is collective comfort in joining together and leaning into the story, not in an obsessive or ruminating way, but I think we get tremendous comfort and unity when we don't go solo in this space. And you know what really touched me, Howard, was when the Bibas family released a statement saying and speaking to this exact thing, we see you and hear you, and we are moved and strengthened by you. And they've offered up their broken pieces, but they know that they're not alone. And then we hear that slogan, we are all Bibas. The entire Jewish world is holding that space for this grief and bearing its weight together. And I think there is solace in that. This is how we deal with our fractured selves. We memorialize, we bind up our broken hearts, we insist we will prevail. Our hearts can be bleeding, but beating. But we always choose life. Absolutely. We meet our pain and grief with belief and hope. And we a true mark of resilience for me is not about feeling good all the time, but getting better at tolerating feeling bad, very bad, some of the time. And I think that this is our superpower. These marks of resilience make us more bulletproof. And I think that this is the winning Jewish survival strategy when it comes to grief.
Absolutely. You know, a great, great thought. Sorry, you were saying the final idea?
The idea is ish echad lev echad. You know, we beat with one heart. And I think that there is a tremendous amount to be said for that. I think it's a way of facing that yo-yoing between the hope and the despair, the fear that is so prevalent, the uncertainty of the future, because this is ongoing trauma. There's yeah. nothing post-traumatic about this.
Right, right.
This is trauma on steroids. It's full-blown trauma.
Absolutely. That is where we do need to leave it. Sarah Kaplan is a clinical psychologist sharing her thoughts on the collective grief and on how we take those small steps in moving through it as best we can. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.